Our next guest on the program is executive producer and author of a brand new podcast, a 30 for 30 ESPN podcast, a fascinating story called Searching for Hobie Baker. We are pleased to be joined this afternoon by Andrew Reynolds.
No, my pleasure. Thanks for the opportunity.
What a wonderful podcast and a fascinating story. What drew you to the story of Hobie Baker?
Well, I actually moved from being a professor at the University of North Carolina in 2020 to Princeton University. And Hobie Baker is sort of in the bricks and the mortar of Princeton University. The hockey rink is named after him in the center of the campus. He's one of the most iconic, legendary former students of Princeton. So when I got there, an acquaintance of mine who'd actually grown up in Princeton came to me and said, listen, I've loved the story of Hobie Baker my entire life. I grew up in Princeton. It's a fascinating story. Why don't we try and dive in and understand who the man really was? Because he was sort of a two-dimensional figure, this great athlete, this great war hero, and the best collegiate hockey player is given the award in his name today, the Hobie Baker Award. But my friend Tim said, let's dive in and really try and discover the layers of this man. So that's how I first got involved.
Well, we know the name very well. We've had two Hobie Baker winners here in our University of Maine hockey program, but I knew very little about anything other than those basics. I wasn't aware of what a terrific football player he was, and there are so many fascinating details that you unearthed in your research, one of them being the fact that he was not only classmates with F. Scott Fitzgerald, but that Fitzgerald idolized him as so many others did.
Yeah, Fitzgerald was a couple of years behind. He was sort of, Fitzgerald wasn't in the in crowd. And Hobie was the football captain, the hockey captain, and, you know, the big man on campus. And so Fitzgerald writes about meeting in person Hobie once, shaking his hand, and just sort of wilting at how much he adored Hobie Baker. Fitzgerald wrote Hobie into his first two books, This Side of Paradise and then The Great Gatsby. I mean, there's a lot of elements of Hobie's life and Hobie's friends' lives in The Great Gatsby. And Hobie is actually a sort of named character in This Side of Paradise.
And, of course, when Hobie Baker was performing these exploits at Princeton, it was at a time when college sports were king in America.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we can think of Hobie at the time as being Michael Jordan and Tom Brady and Pat Tillman all rolled into one. He was front page news. The newspapers would say Hobie Baker and the rest of the Princeton Six play in New York tonight. And Hobie was always, you know, a little bit aggrieved by this. He didn't like to be singled out. He wanted his teammates to receive as much attention as he did. But people would just come to watch Hobie play. And as you said, I mean, he held football records at Princeton for about 50 years as well as hockey records as well. He was in the days when football was a very dangerous sport. He didn't play with a helmet. It was more like rugby. Something like 23 players died the year before Hobie started at Princeton in football games. So he was this iconic figure that he could do every sport. He was only allowed to play two sports at Princeton. But he could have been on the golf team. He could have been on the swimming team, the diving team, the gymnastic team, even the cross-country team. There's a story that he was shown the shooting range at Princeton, and he'd never held a gun before. And after 2 hours, he qualified for the team.
We're talking with Andrew Reynolds about the wonderful new 30 for 30 podcast, Searching for Hobie Baker. Well, one of the most fascinating stories in the podcast is about his friendship, his relationship with an individual by the name of Percy Pine, who came to Hobie's rescue after graduation and then became a huge part of his life.
Yeah, Percy Pine is a character from Central Casting. He's flamboyant. He's incredibly wealthy. He's the son of Moses Taylor Pine, who was the sixth or seventh wealthiest man in America at the time, friends with the Astors, the Vanderbilts, the Goulets, all the wealthy Gilded Age people. And Percy sort of took an immediate like. He was 9 years older. He'd also been to St. Paul's and Princeton. And Percy took an immediate shine to Hobie. And then as we develop their relationship, as we find the letters, as we see the reminiscences from friends, And then we presented all these materials to experts who were experts about gay relationships at the time. It's very clear that they were a couple. They lived together. They wrote deeply loving and affectionate letters to each other, mostly from the First World War and the trenches of France where Hobie was and Percy was back in America. But this was the iconic American athlete, a great hockey player, one of the inventors of hockey in America, who was a gay man. And of course, in the modern age, that's quite a thing.
Well, no question about that. But as you point out in the podcast, our notion of identity is very different than it was back in the teens when there was not that pressure to label yourself.
Yeah, I found it really interesting. I've spent 15, 20 years working about the political representation of gay and lesbian and bisexual people, and I thought I knew a lot. But I had no idea that before the First World War in America, from the 1880s, 90s through to the 19-teens, there was a lot more space for men to have relationships with men. And men really didn't think of themselves as gay or straight. They just didn't use those terms. They thought of themselves as having passions, having loves, having interests. They might be in love with men and women. They might be just in love with men. But that boxing, that binary of just being, I'm one or the other, wasn't there. And what that meant was there was a lot more space. Obviously, people weren't overt and they weren't out there holding hands in the street, but there was a lot more space to have a gay relationship before the First World War in America. And it was sort of, it's almost a little bit like don't ask, don't tell in the military and, you know, before the 90s. But they had a place to be and they were allowed to be who they were.
And he actually got engaged to a woman by the name of Mimi Scott. But am I right that that was not unusual for gay men at that time in America?
Yeah, actually, to be honest, it's not unusual for gay men at any time in America to end up marrying women. The interesting thing about Hobie's relationship and engagement to Mimi Scott was that Mimi Scott was introduced to Hobie by Cole Porter, Hobie's friend Cole Porter, the famous songwriter. Cole Porter was a famously gay man who was married to a woman, and he and his wife introduced Mimi. And then, a little bit more evidence, Mimi goes on to marry two publicly gay men over the rest of her life. Some critics of that story have said, well, he can't have been gay because he wanted to marry Mimi. And it's like, well, that story really should have confirmed the suspicions.
It is a fascinating story for anyone who thinks they know Hobie Baker. You may have some surprises in store searching for Hobie Baker and ESPN 30 for 30 podcast. Andy, a wonderful work on this. Thank you so much for talking with us today.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it, Rich.